You realize who you're dealing with, don't you?
You have defeated us many times, Captain Hardcase. You are the luckiest man in the galaxy. But there will come a day when your luck runs dry. A day when we shall taste victory and show you no mercy. Perhaps that day is today.
I think not. Close channel.
Channel closed.
Engine, attack pattern Delta, bob and weave.
Aye, sir. Attack pattern Delta.
Misty, stand by with a full barrage of torpedoes.
Standing by, sir.
Get us within 5,000 meters of their command ship.
Aye, sir. Closing to 5,000 meters. On my mark. Mark!
Misty, fire! Full barrage!
Firing, sir! Target has been destroyed, sir.
The Klerg will never try to enslave this system again. Not after that lesson. I was Captain Mac Hardcase, the most decorated officer in the Galactic Confederation. Citation for conspicuous gallantry on Theta Beta D, Landite Order of Tactics for the Battle of Barnard Star, Confederation Order of Heroism. First ever five-time recipient, 2278 through 2282. But on this planet, Mr. Mac Hardcase. Loser, cripple, layabout, charity case, and generally useless, maladjusted bag of bones who's at odds with how the world works. This is my story. The story of one of the galaxy's greatest heroes brought low.
QuietPlease.org presents Beyond Awakening. Starring John Gauntz as Mac Hardcase. Episode 11. Goodbye, Blue Tuesday.
The knowledge implants Monolith Eigen provided gave me a good idea of how to go about living independently in the city. I wasn't overwhelmed. Unfortunately, I still couldn't feel good about my life, particularly with the lack of progress my body was making. I wheeled into my apartment the first day, looked around, and all I could feel was emptiness, a void. This was supposed to be my home. But there was no soft hum of engines, no oscillation of the bridge sensors. These white walls, these wood floors, and little windows into a single tiny world, it all reminded me that I'd never be home again. I wheeled myself over to what was now my couch and laboriously pulled myself onto it. Not that there was any real point to sitting on the couch instead of in my wheelchair, and it'd just make things more difficult moving back later. My arm strength was coming along almost as poorly as my leg strength, but the struggle to the couch helped me build a little illusion, and in a further effort to escape reality, I turned on the television. Imagine my surprise when I saw myself on it, my true self. Myself that was truly at home.
Report!
The last volley took out our shields!
Reroute auxiliary power to aft shields and return fire!
And for a moment I was nostalgic. Then I felt humiliated, angry, and above all,
you say
hopeless.
Something, Ensign?
Incoming!
I'm sorry, Mac. That was always part of our funding plan, and you signed the papers authorizing us and releasing your rights.
You had me signing so many papers, you told me it was all just formalities.
It was.
Well, I revoke your right to air my memories to the world.
You can't. Anyway, I don't think you really want to lose that new apartment it helps pay for.
I'll talk to the others. We'll come up with a plan.
You do that.
I still had my crew. We were in this together. They'd rally behind me.
I don't care much about their television, sir. They can do what they like. Does it matter?
I know about the show. It's paying the interest on my medical debt from the bombing. I don't want to rock the boat and risk retaliation.
I like the show. Clever idea and good publicity for us. We need positive covers like that to counter Union for Humanity's narrative.
So that was it. I was alone. I couldn't order them around anymore. In reality, I've got all the authority of a first-year cadet. There was nothing to do but accept another humiliation. Another indignity. What's one more? Where's the breaking point? After serving as the bait to catch two terrorists, I was hoping they'd keep me in the loop. No such luck. The FBI never returned my calls. I asked Vang about it. She said they got some good information out of the interrogation, but refused to get into any specifics. And she told me not to press the matter if I value my freedom, since there are people involved who don't take kindly to loose lips. So that was that. Almost. I did get one more call from Union for Humanity, about a week later.
Captain Hardcase?
Look, what's the point of this pretense? I know Admiral Graveman doesn't exist, and you know I know.
Then what are the command codes for your starship?
You want the command codes to an imaginary starship.
If you're sure the Chimera isn't real, you won't mind giving me your command codes.
Sorry, I can't.
Why not?
I can't betray my allegiance, even though it's fictional.
Why can't you?
Because then there'd truly be nothing left of me. My honor is all I have.
You sound like a man in need of a cause worth fighting for.
You could say that.
You know you're on the wrong side here.
What?
We have a cause worth fighting for. You could join us.
You're inviting me, the very thing you're rallying against, to join Union for Humanity? Have you lost your fucking mind?
If you help us take down Monolith Eigen and ensure nobody creates any more of your kind, then we'll welcome you. Just having you standing with us would send a really powerful message.
I'm not that self-hating.
It's not you we hate. It's what you represent.
You know, I actually miss the Klerg.
How's that?
Nothing ambiguous about them. Nothing subtle. Black and white. I always knew where I stood and how to deal with them.
Goodbye, Mr. Hardcase.
The moment I set down the phone, it occurred to me that I should have played along. I should have joined them and become a mole. That's what Captain Hardcase would have done. It's not the sort of thing Mr. Hardcase feels capable of anymore. Is it that I've become a coward? Or is it that I'm keenly aware that I no longer have plot armor allowing me to implausibly win mismatched fights? Or that I no longer have the use of my legs or a strong enough punch to knock over a feather? I kept on seeing Dr. Peterson, but I'm not sure why. He's not a lot of help. I guess he's someone to talk to, someone interested in what I have to say.
Do things like the murder of your parents still trouble you as much, now that you know none of that was real?
More than before. It's an old trauma ripped open with a fresh new wound. Instead of just being murdered, my parents have been wiped from history, along with my brother and everyone else.
But you still have your three friends.
Earhart and I hate each other. Misty can never think of me the way I think of her, and Blackburn is just some kid I just met on Alpha Omega C.
You don't have to remain static where your backstory left you. You can build bonds with them through your shared circumstances. You can support each other.
I can't even support myself. I'm a broken man, a product of a life of trauma. Doc, what kind of damn sadist would give me all of this trauma? They could have programmed a happy backstory.
Perhaps they felt the trauma would make you stronger.
That's just what people say to make the best of it. I've said it myself because I have to try to make it true. But it's not true. Trauma only ever makes us weaker. It can make you build thick walls around yourself and that look strong to people on the outside. But they're glass walls. And when they shatter...
They've offered to edit the trauma out of your memory. If you don't want it, get rid of it.
But then it wouldn't be me anymore.
Do you wish you could be an ordinary person with an ordinary life?
Doc, that's my biggest problem. I don't think I can handle an ordinary life.
Your life is anything but ordinary.
But here, I'm only extraordinary for what has been done to me, not for anything I've done myself.
You have decades of life ahead of you to do extraordinary things for yourself.
In this world? How can I? Everything I'm good at doesn't exist here.
Everything?
Yes. Everything. The day after that session, I was talking with LeVar. LeVar Blake, my agent. That's right. I have an agent. Monolith Eigen has my television rights, but I can still do a book. I might as well tell my side. Present myself to the world the way I want to.
You're the first, even, of your crew. You're the first who died, the first brain they start experimenting on. That's very marketable. People are going to want to read your story.
I've never written a book before. I mean, I'm a couple of months old, so of course I haven't. But you know what I mean.
Don't worry about that. We wouldn't let you write it anyway. In situations like these, noteworthy people who need an autobiography fast to capitalize on the zeitgeist, we always use a ghostwriter.
Huh?
A professional, hopefully we can get Mel Shui Shui, she's the best, a professional who writes her autobiography for you.
But doesn't that make it a biography and not an autobiography?
Easy to tell you're new to this planet.
What I really want to do, what I want to use this book money for, is to get back into space in whatever capacity I can.
I might be able to get you an advance big enough to get you a seat on a new Shepard flight. I'll have to check on their disability accommodations.
That's a spaceship?
Right.
Great. Where's it go?
To the edge of space, 100 kilometers up.
What? It just sits there, hovers or something?
It falls back down.
After how long?
A few minutes.
There's gotta be something better than that.
There's a couple of orbital hotels, but you're not gonna make that kind of money. I suppose you could plead your case with a billionaire. Some of them have taken people with them to orbit, paying their way. But I really don't think you're what any of them are looking for.
Why not?
You don't really have any applicable skills or expertise.
But I've been in space since...
Not really. Even the laws of physics didn't work the same in your fantasy space.
Well, suppose I commit myself to learning.
Assuming you fully overcome your disability, it could take you decades.
If I succeed, how far can I go? How far out?
If we ignore that you'd be a ludicrously old astronaut, well, they're building a base on Mars.
Mars? The easiest goddamn planet on the whole fucking system, and you haven't even finished a base yet?
Look, you should talk to somebody else about space. I'm just your literary agent. I'd better get going.
There's no regaining the stars once you've fallen to Earth. I'm stuck on this little dirt ball. The only way off planet is through imagination. Science fiction. Ray Lotus's widow stops by every Tuesday evening. I don't particularly want her to. Actually, I definitely don't want her to. But I can't tell her no. I owe Ray this much as rent for living in his body. But I can never give her what she really wants.
I think I might love you.
Lady, I'm not Ray Lotus. I'll never be Ray Lotus.
You don't know that.
I'd love to be him. Sounds like he had a real nice life, a purpose.
He did.
And he had a sweet, devoted wife.
Thank you.
But I'm not him. And if I could give up my life to give him back to you, I would. At least that'd give my life a purpose.
You don't have to be Ray for me to love you.
Because I remind you of him?
Is that so bad? You're alone in this world. I offer you love. Does it matter why? Don't you find me attractive?
Rosita, you're a lovely woman, but I can't love you. I could never love you.
Why not? Is there someone else?
Well, yes. I mean, I don't think it's mutual, but there's only room in my heart for her.
You haven't told her?
There'd be no point.
Tell her. Life is too short not to.
Yes. In one of the universe's supreme ironic twists, I'm in love with a woman who doesn't believe in the concept of romantic love. A woman whose whole species has no such concept. I wonder if they programmed me to love her, just so they could sit back and laugh at the futility that would ensue, or if it's actually my heart breaking the chains of my program to reach out for hers. Is it the hardships we've been through together in such a short time? I thought a while about Rosita's advice. This whole existence, since my awakening, has been a series of humiliations. What's one more, if there's even a chance in a million? So the very next day, I arranged to meet up with Misty for dinner. It was good of you to meet me on such short notice.
I always enjoyed the time we spent together, sir.
Say, your accent sounds different.
I'm taking voice lessons, trying to learn the local accent. I need to blend in here after all.
Oh, I liked your Cthulian accent.
I like not being recognized by the people who want me dead, sir.
Of course, of course. Misty, now that we're here, now that we have to live out our lives here, there's something I've been wanting to tell you.
What is it, sir?
Misty, I love you.
That's fascinating, sir.
I mean it, Misty. I want to be with you. I want to grow old with you. Is there any chance you feel the same?
Sir, you know we don't have romantic love on Cthulhu. We mate purely for reproduction and raise our children communally. We don't pair up.
But you're not really Cthulian. You're a human being, a woman.
I'm sorry, sir. I still don't understand everything about human social structures and partnering.
Maybe with time.
I believe the proper thing for me to do here by human custom is to tell you a firm no. Not to lead you on.
I'm not used to being rejected. I've had my way with women of 8 species. But it's not so much the rejection that stings as the utter hopeless absurdity of the situation. Of my falling in love with someone who isn't even capable of understanding what love is.
This torch you're carrying for Misty, that's the sort of thing people want to read. I can work with that. But I'll need to spice it up. Maybe say you had a brief, torrid love affair on an alien planet a year ago.
We didn't. And why would she have done that?
alien spores, making her temporarily feel love. Hot tentacle sex, and a haunting shame about it. A lingering sexual tension between you. Yeah, this'll sell.
Doesn't it matter to you what's true and what's not?
As an author, my duty is to capture the feeling. I deal in deeper emotional truths, not the technical truths. The technical truths make a crappy story, a really convoluted narrative that lacks a deeper meaning.
So you add the meaning.
I find the meaning that's buried in there, and I draw it out, and I polish it off, and I put it on display so it can't be missed.
Seems like a lot of lying to me.
Mac, it's easy to see you're not a happy man.
That's true.
Nobody who fixates on reality is happy. Reality sucks. Get over it. Get over yourself and your pride.
And join you in crafting whatever lies will sell the best?
The water's nice. Come on in. You know, I actually really envy you in a way.
You do.
You lived every author's dream. You actually experienced fantastic imaginary worlds and adventures. You can remember living the stuff I'll only ever be able to write about.
Instead of being thankful, I'm angry about it.
Right, man. So you were lied to. Big deal. We're all being lied to all the time. You got a hell of a ride.
I don't think I'm going to want to read my autobiography when it comes out. Doesn't sound like my kind of book. And I fear that I may hate the protagonist. The sessions with Dr. Peterson have grown increasingly frustrating.
When you have these dark thoughts, does it worry you? Do you feel your sanity slipping away?
It's the other way around, Doc.
You've lost me.
The darkest moments are the clearest, the surest, seeing the emptiness of life crystallize before me. It's the happy moments where I wonder if I'm going insane.
Do you have suicidal feelings?
I've thought about it.
Do you have a plan to kill yourself?
What would be the point? Died before, there's no escape. Life and death are the same thing, equally empty.
That's good. If you had a plan, I'd have to put you on a 72-hour hold.
That's how you deal with suicidal people here? You capture them, pump them full of drugs, lock them in a room and force them to live against their will?
We don't want anyone doing something permanent on a temporary impulse.
And you wonder why they don't get better?
What would you propose we do?
In the Confederation, we give everyone a chance to fulfill themselves.
In America, we let you work for that. But you have to be tenacious. You have to scratch and claw.
I've noticed how many of your people are failing. How many homeless in this city.
You don't have to be like them. You need to stand up for yourself and manifest the future you want.
I can't even stand up. I may never walk. Misty, Earhart, Blackburn, they've got their strength back. They're doing great, but I may never walk.
Turn that to your advantage. Make yourself an inspiration.
Where the hell do you get off telling me to make my suffering an inspiration? An inspiration? If I were to wring your neck to choke you within an inch of your worthless little life, would you be inspired? If I put you on a pot over a fire and boiled you like a lobster, can I tell you how inspiring you are as you scream and beg? Dr. Peterson's receptionist informed me that he wouldn't be offering me another appointment until I apologized and agreed to some rules and an anger management workshop. Fine by me, happy to be rid of his mindless platitudes and stupid questions. Picture this scene if you can. A bright, sunny, cheerful morning. A lazy, brown-tinted river dividing Sacramento from Yolo County. Connecting the two banks, the old I Street Bridge. A rusty metal truss swing bridge, an artifact from before the First World War. Like me, it outlived its usefulness and was replaced, but was left to carry on with little purpose, serving the occasional pedestrian. In the middle of the upper deck of that bridge, a man, a tired old man in a wheelchair, with lines on his forehead and a frown across his face. He's been still for a few minutes now, looking south down the Sacramento River toward the busy metallic gold-colored tower bridge and all the little boats and the little people in Riverwalk Park. He spots a sea lion pulling itself awkwardly out of the water to flop down at the end of a little pier across from the Delta King. It doesn't make him smile. Nothing can. There's a burning question in his mind, an all-consuming question. To jump or not to jump. But before I can decide, I'm interrupted.
Good morning, sir. Can I have a word with you?
Of course, Misty. Hey, your accent is practically gone now.
Thank you. I've been working hard at it. Sir, I have a little problem.
What's that?
Senator Ives wants to come see me. She says she wants to see how I'm adjusting, but I don't want her even knowing where I live.
She's probably going to be the next president. We have to work with her. Have to convince her to be on our side somehow. If anyone can make our case, I believe it's you. This sounds like a golden opportunity.
But I'm scared, sir.
Of what? Ives?
Of what she represents.
The hate?
I don't think she hates us, sir. It's the casual brutality. The willingness to destroy us to score points, thinking of us only as pawns in the political game and not as real people.
You'll have to show her that we can be useful allies. Channel that Cthulian strength and confidence.
I'll try. Thank you, sir.
I suppose that should have been my chance. My chance to unburden myself. To talk to one of the three people who might actually understand me. But it wasn't. We were out of sync, on different wavelengths. My role then and there was to deal with her problems, not mine. After she left, I took a look back over the edge, to the water below. But the moment had passed, and now it felt absurd. I thought of how ridiculous I'd look, struggling slowly out of the wheelchair, trying to hoist myself over the side without the arm strength. And it isn't that tall of a bridge. The fall probably wouldn't kill me. I'd have to count on drowning. And if 20 minutes without oxygen deep under the Pacific Ocean and 3 years of being brain dead hadn't stopped me, what chance did this little bridge and sluggish river stand? So I went home to think some more.
Beyond Awakening, Episode 11, Goodbye Blue Tuesday, was written and produced by Paul Narum. It starred John Gauntz as Mac Hardcase. Also featured were Ahmad A.J. Judah as Lavar, Steph Canapa as Misty LaQuille, Alex Foote as Dr. Peterson, Victoria Vahidi as Mel Shui Shui, Roger Arnold as Admiral Graveman, Rue Ryder as Rosita Lotus, Mel Crushmore as Dr. Minnie Moreau, Nick Ben Wong as the Clerg, Gwyneth Knight as Trisha Blackburn, and David Loftus as Clay Earhart. This is Paul Narum. Music licensed from Joel Studler and Creative Commons Zero on public domain sources. Special thanks to our backers who made this possible. Jamie Henderson, Sydney Umanya, Joanne Phillips, George Williams, Steph, Kyle Walking Hat, Daddy Mangete, EVD, Dave, and Capable T001. To learn more about Beyond Awakening or support the show, go to quietplease.org/awakening. Thanks for listening.